So I'm really excited for this episode of the Underdogs of Animal Welfare. We have two very special ladies from the Palm Valley Animal Center adoption team. They are adoption leads. That's Stephanie and Yovelli. These girls are great, and I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. I mean, we talk about everything from the really hard times to some of our best wins. We talk about transparency. I mean, it's just a really, really cool episode. I know you're going to like it. And here we go. Episode 4 of the Underdogs of Animal Welfare. This is the PVAC adoption team. All right. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Underdogs of Animal Welfare. My name is Michael Bricker. And today we have two amazing guests. They are adoption specialists here at Palm Valley Animal Center. And I would just like to roll in with introducing you guys. So they're arguing on who's going to go first. So
Yovelli.
Yovelli's first?
Hi. Okay. Hi, I'm Yovelli. I'm adoption team lead. I've been working here for going on, what, 3.5 years?
Three and a half years.
That's awesome.
I'm Stephanie Baggett. I am the adoption supervisor as well. We are both supervisors here at Palm Valley Animal Center. Been here for about 3.5 years, going on to 4. But beforehand, still have been doing animal advocating.
Perfect. Amazing. So what I want to talk about today is a bunch of stuff, but I definitely want to find out who you guys are as people. And then I want to talk about, you know, all over what adoptions mean for us and our community, and for our shelter, and really some misconceptions that people have about adoptable animals and things like that. So first I want to start off with each of you guys individually. So Stephanie, let's start off with you. What brought you to Palm Valley Animal Center?
So in all honestly, I've been doing animal advocating, rescuing for as long as I, you know, have been down here. I'm 29. I've been doing it since I was in elementary. I love animals, rescuing. Years ago, I fostered for Palm Valley, and I did not like the way that things were going. Animals were dying in my care. I'm not going to lie. Like, I did not like Palm Valley Animal Center. So yeah. I continued to do my own things outside. And then later down the road, I heard of this no-kill shelter that was going to be made, PAWS, the Lurie Pantress PAWS Center. So I applied for that. Sure enough, I got an interview with Palm Valley. And I was confused as to what was going on. So I was like, okay. But things had changed. I understood that things were going better. I was informed. I liked what was going on. So I started at Palm Valley, moved to PAWS, and I was there for a good 2.5-3 years. And then I moved over here back to Palm Valley Animal Center.
Recently.
Yeah, recently. So, I mean, Palm Valley Animal Center, PAWS, we're the same entity. People still get that confused as separate places.
Well, before we go any further, I think this is a great topic. Tell me the difference between Palm Valley and PAWS, at least from your point of view.
From my point of view.
Well, let's first, actually, before that, let's talk about what you thought it was when you first received the position. Because you talked about...
Yes.
PAWS being a no-kill facility, so let's talk about that.
So, PAWS was the first no-kill shelter here. We all were excited about that. I started at Palm Valley, moved over to PAWS. Then from, you know, being informed a specific way without fully understanding what was going on, all the animals that were brought to PAWS were, you know, saved for, they're waiting for adoptions, live outcomes, they're not going to be euthanized. Without really having been back to Palm Valley, not understanding what the holding process was for the rest of the animals. So all of us there at PAWS, you know, understood as everything, you know, it's being good. These animals are being saved. Those were the ones that we interacted with.
Yeah.
So it was a no-kill, but without really understanding what was going on still at our intake, Palm Valley, there was still a lot of that misunderstanding what was going on. So we were a no-kill for some time. Then you came in and everyone was a little upset.
Talk about it.
Because we were not a no-kill. We were not a no-kill. And, you know, we all were upset because we get relationships with these animals that are there. They've been with us for a period of time. So to understand, like, hey, this animal's been here for a long time. If it doesn't get outcomed, well, then I'm sorry. Like, the flow of things need to work better.
Yeah.
We couldn't kind of comprehend that in that moment. But later, kind of understood, yes, with realizing that more animals were, their lives were at stake at Palm Valley because space wasn't opening up at pause for movement for them.
Yeah.
I understood that. It took me a little bit to, like, take that in, but I understood that more animals needed to be saved. So as many people get mad that we don't have a no-kill, to kind of explain it is, it's more animals were dying because of that. So
yeah, that's exactly right. So when I first got here, I was so confused. So I did my tour of Palm Valley first, my first day here, and then I did my tour of Paul's, and I was so confused. So Palm Valley shelter built in the 70s, looks like it was built in the 70s, looks like nothing has changed since then. And then you have Paul's, which is one of the most beautiful adoption centers I've ever seen. And it even felt different as far as when you walked in there. The vibe was way different.
Yeah.
You know, at Palm Valley, it felt like, you know, everything
crowded.
Was urgent. It was crowded. It was crammed. You know, people were really focused on getting those animals out. Go over to Paul's, then there was music playing. It was softer. Everybody was calm. And
there was a focus of getting these animals adopted. I'm cut in there.
I understand. But if they didn't get out, okay.
Yeah.
Right? For the people at Paul's. So there wasn't that natural urgency. I'm not saying that the work wasn't there.
Yes.
And you guys weren't trying to get animals out. But
it was not fully understood what was going on behind, like,
correct.
Our back facility.
And so if you guys didn't understand that, you know, I can only imagine how confusing that was to the public,
yeah.
right? So
let me just throw in. We did
sure.
have the whole ringworm thing. The cats, I mean, dogs' flow was different. Cats' flow was a lot different because we were housing ringworms. So when you, the biggest thing from, like, people not liking when you first came in to understanding was, hey, these cats have been here for too long. They're not, like, being outcomed. We need to do a different thing. So, yeah, there was a lot of emotions going on between allowing animals to be euthanized or just getting them out.
Right.
And then that was the start of things. And there was, you know, we had to talk and fully understand. So flow of movement went different. Opened back up to open both facilities being open for adoptable animals. Things were being understood better.
Correct. So we changed a lot of things. So, you're right. So when I first got there, I realized that there was a clog, that animals over at Paul's were given months and months and months to find a live outcome, when animals over at Palm Valley Animal Center were given 72 hours, most of them. So I realized that there was an issue that we had to change. So we did change the way flow worked, going from Palm Valley to Paul's, and I know that was an issue with some people at Paul's initially.
I didn't understand, too, myself, why we weren't open here at Palm Valley. I could have never understood why when we were open at Paul's but not here. So that was something myself,
right.
us
So at that time, yeah,
know.
Palm Valley wasn't open for adoptions. That's one of the changes that were made first. And then over at Paul's, too, it's a big facility, especially when you first walk in, and it felt empty. You know, there was those four rooms that were used for, like, get acquainted rooms right in the middle. And we've since turned them into, like, community cat areas as well, which has been an improvement. But you brought up ringworm, so we're going to get to that in a second. But first, Novelli, I want to talk to you.
Hi.
So what brought you to Palm Valley Animal Center?
So, my sister started working here before I did.
Okay.
She said, oh, they're opening a new center, you should apply. So I did. I got the position.
So you applied for Paul's as well?
No, I applied for Paul's because
they couldn't work together.
So your sister is Yessie?
Yes.
And
yes.
She's in our rescue department, and she was already working here. How long was she working here before you?
She was working here, I believe, 2 years before I started working.
Oh, wow,
yeah,
okay.
So she was here for a while. She was in kennels.
So it took you 2 years to realize this is where you should be?
Pretty much. No, I like animals.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need something else. I just like, okay, let's apply this. And I started as kennels in Palm Valley Animal Center. Eventually, we got moved. Me and Stephanie got moved to Paws.
Together?
We're born leaders.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
We got hired the same day.
What?
Started.
Really?
We're partners in animal
gosh.
Welfare.
We got hired.
We've been
wow.
together since the beginning.
Holy moly,
we
I did not
moved,
know
yeah,
that.
Got moved to Paws, started in kennels. We both started in kennels. And then I asked for a position as a specialist if they had any openings.
Yeah.
So I did get hired for the position and started doing adoptions ever since. So it would be maybe going on 2.5 years doing adoptions.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's crazy. So you guys started on the same day.
And we do it all. I mean, when we we both started kennels, but and then she moved to adoptions, and I'm like was in between, torn. But we do it all as far as kennels,
everything.
Adoptions, movement, pictures, like you name it. We're not gonna have anything hold us back.
Well, that's amazing. So let's talk about it. How would you summarize your career so far in Palm Valley? If you could just summarize it in a couple words.
There's been a lot of emotions, stress. Every day is something different. I'm happy doing what I do, but there's also a lot of stress and emotions that go into it that people don't really understand.
Yeah.
People will think, you know, oh, you work with animals and you play with them every day. You know, I wish I could. I do in one split of a second, like a minute that I'm there, like taking a cute photo or video for social media, like that. That's just in that second to get it adopted. Otherwise, we're on the go 24/7, like.
Right.
Exhaustion, but not because we don't love it.
Oh yeah.
So what do you think?
I like working here. I actually got anxiety working here.
Anxiety working here.
Yeah.
I didn't have any until I started working here.
Gray hairs.
Yeah. Tell me.
They're
about
popping out.
Man, this isn't gonna make anybody want to work in animal
welfare.
Any more water supply?
It's worth it. It's worth it every day when we come in. It's worth working here. You do get it because you have that deadline that you need to get the animal out.
You need to have a sense of urgency.
Yeah, of course. And when you first came in, I didn't like you.
I think that's going to be a reoccurring theme on this. No, I love it. That's going to be a reoccurring theme on this podcast.
Yeah,
you were not the first person to say that.
Okay. Not the last.
And you're definitely not going to be the last.
Especially that time that we got the deadline for the youth. For pause.
Bring
I was
up.
Like, who does he think he is? So we got that deadline, and I'm like, okay, let's start working
bring
on
that,
it.
Yeah, bring that up.
Well,
no, because it's
this
true.
Is
we,
a good story.
We had a deadline. We needed to reach this deadline in order to make a flow of animals to come through to get adopted.
So there was how many? So
50
when
maybe?
when we're talking about the deadline, so just remember, people that are listening
don't
to this probably maybe
okay.
maybe not. So when we're talking about this, we created a flow through Palm Valley and Paul's. There was a clog at Paul's like we talked about. So to relieve that clog, we had to move those animals out.
Mm-hmm.
And there had to be a sense of urgency instilled in Paul's, right? So we were super transparent with the animals that were going on a youth list over at PVAC, but that never happened over at Paul's. So when I made the decision to do that, this is what upset me.
There was
upset.
A deadline for those animals.
Yep. So we put a deadline on, I think it was, close
like
to 40. 24
to 48 hours for what? Like
40, 40 dogs.
50 dogs. 40
dogs.
Yeah. And so we put that deadline, and this is what makes you guys so special. So let's talk about that. What happened?
So you put the deadline. We started working on pictures, started working on editing, networking, everything, just pushing it out there, videos. We told everybody who came in, take a picture, put it on Facebook. Push it. Push every animal that's in here to get out.
It was a code red, and we put all those animals out there. Every single photo, every single animal, code red. We were so transparent. Not that we ever aren't, but the transparency to get them out,
help
it was life or death. Like, come and take them.
Mm-hmm.
And people came in. People came flooding in. And took
we
would cry when they went home. We were just so happy and thankful, like.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
We had a family that had a farm, and they took four.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. So I think that's so special. So you had this deadline.
Mm-hmm.
These are animals that you guys knew, and
mm-hmm.
you needed to get out. Everything was just working, you know, the same way until I came. I changed everything, and at first, obviously, this was
confusion.
It's confusing. You know. It's emotional, like we're talking about. I can only imagine the stress, right? But you guys didn't take any of those as excuses.
No, not at all.
Regardless of what you thought about the decision or about me, you guys, what was the end result of that?
We worked. So,
we worked to
get them all adopted.
Every single one.
Even though we were not a fan of it.
Yeah.
We can complain about it, but that's not going to change the fact that they're in the deadline. We need to do something about it instead of complaining about it.
We worked through it.
Yeah.
We worked through everything.
Well, that's not special.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not, you guys had every excuse to just stop,
yeah.
to quit,
yeah.
to revolt, to say no, but instead of any of that, you wasted
no time
at all to make sure that those animals...
Instead of just, like, allowing, like, okay, change to be made and either complaining and not doing anything, we're going to ask questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we asked and we got answers and we continued to either like it or not and just continued
yeah.
to move and understand and...
Just do it.
Here we are.
It's amazing.
Pushing more animals.
So what did you guys learn about that whole experience?
Well, so for myself, Stephanie, the experience of no kill to kill, opening up both facilities, understood that a flow of animals, there needed to be a specific flow to help more animals get adopted. And,
correct.
Understanding deadlines for animals, not everyone likes it.
Right.
But we are a high intake facility
mm-hmm.
with hundreds of animals coming in. You have to understand in your mind that a deadline for one animal doesn't necessarily mean we're wanting to kill it. It's somebody needs to come get it, and the other animals are still at risk behind that animal.
So, and I think, you know, there were always deadlines, right?
Always.
But it's just that we weren't as open to letting people know about those
mm-hmm.
deadlines. So animals were still dying, and they were dying, a lot sooner than they are, you know, today, definitely. But even then, but people didn't know about them.
Mm-mm.
So how did you guys feel when you first found out, you know, really how many animals were being saved or actually the opposite of that? How did you guys feel when you first found out how many animals were dying?
Horrible. There wasn't a whole lot of transparency within the workplace, which was always making myself and certain people angry.
Yeah.
We worked there. We wanted to know what was going on.
I
and
can imagine.
Never had full transparency, which always gets me upset. If I don't know something, I work here, like, I feel like we need to know.
Definitely.
So finally understanding numbers of, you know, deaths and outcomes, like, it helped.
Yeah.
It really helped.
It's tough, right? It's tough to understand that, but I feel like how can... You know, and why I'm such an advocate of transparency is because if people don't know that there's a problem, how can they help?
Exactly.
Right? So if you guys over at Paul's don't know that at that point, 7 out of every 10 animals that was coming in, 7 out of every 10 dogs and 9 out of every 10 cats were dying, how could you help?
Exactly.
Before you got here, I was always angry as to why we couldn't be transparent. I'm all about transparency.
Yeah.
So why we couldn't go on social media and say, hey, this animal,
oh, yeah.
this, that, like, we couldn't say if it was at risk or how many days,
we
when
couldn't.
It came in. We couldn't put anything. We would get, like, in trouble for it. And I couldn't understand why, like, transparency is so needed.
Well, I can tell you why.
Okay.
It's so scary, right? And we're dealing with that now, right? So, as, right?
Always, no matter what.
No matter what, you know, whatever we do is going to, you know, some people are going to think we
yeah.
can do better, and you know, we can do better, and
yeah,
we will do
sure.
better
with the help of our own community as well.
Correct. but yeah, so I think it's just scary, you know, it's scary for people to, because a lot of people, especially in animal welfare, are not trusting of people and of the community, right? So our first thought is we tell people that these amount of animals are dying, they're going to call us killers and murderers,
yeah.
and they are, right?
Yeah.
But then there's a whole group of people that are going to come and help. And I think that first group of those 50 dogs that made it out in 2 days was a big thing for everyone. I mean, that was really, really big for Palm Valley as well, because, you know, I was floating between both locations at that time, and that helped so much over at Palm Valley. Like, and I don't know if you guys, like, you know that it helped there, but mm. seeing both, Palm Valley was so happy that they could move over
animals
50 animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The same day. It was just such an amazing thing. And then both groups, Paul's and Palm Valley, had a new understanding for the community, and that, hey, not everybody is bad. Not everybody thinks we're killers and murderers. There's a bunch of people out there that want to help. So I think that was a huge turning point in this whole story. You know, that adoption weekend. Seeing that many people come out, talking to the community in that way, and really being super transparent about a facility that all of the media prior to then was, hey, this is a no kill. And now we're saying, no, it's not. It can't be if Palm Valley's not. And really blending those two things. It's not Palm Valley and Paul's. We're together. It's one team
it's
here.
One team. There's still a misunderstanding from the community, and certain people that come in every day will ask, you guys are no kill. Well, we're reaching our goal.
Right.
We're
not
whole,
there yet.
The whole transition into transparency was a big help, because our second code red at Paws, where we had to get multiple animals out in less than a day, that transparency, people loved it. Even though, you know, no one loves like animals to be at risk of euthanasia, but that code red and the sense of urgency and the transparency, people were with that. They shared
right.
it. They were like, when's the next deadline for the rest of the animals? Can we get the next list? Like, so there's people who want
to
help.
So what would you guys say to other shelters that are struggling with that transparency piece? Because there's a lot of shelters out there that are still euthanizing animals,
what
but
that?
Are afraid to tell the public who they're euthanizing, when they're euthanizing, and really tell them who's at risk. So what would you say, personally, from a staff level?
Just don't let it hold you back. For myself personally, I've always been interested in transparency. You need to know. You're not going to like the answer.
Right.
If you have a deadline of 24 hours, you yourself might not have that time. Like, someone's going to say, well, I don't have a day. Can you give me 2 days? Someone else is going to be like, why are you murdering those animals? Don't
right.
let people's comments stop you from being transparent, because in the end of the day, someone else is going to come in and say, I can help that animal.
Right.
Everyone's going to have words. Those people who are sitting there
yeah.
behind screens bashing you, are those people doing anything? No, you are. You're the person that's putting that animal out there. That animal needs life-saving. So if it has 24 hours, if it has a deadline of 5 hours, it's urgent. Put it out there. Let them know where the animal came from. It needs to get out. Why? Because those are things people need to know when coming in.
I think a big thing is focus, right? Staying focused. So our focus is to get this animal out. We're going to do everything. We're going to take a video, tell a story, write a bio, do a little, you know, picture or spotlight and put it out. The focus is getting that animal out.
Mm-hmm.
The focus should not be what people are saying.
People
about
are going to say anything they want. They're going to tell you great for helping them, and there's going to be people telling you you're horrible, you're murderers.
Yeah.
Ignore them. I used to be on Facebook all the time trying to rescue animals on pages that people sell, breed, and all of that, and I got off Facebook. I don't ever get on Facebook unless I really, really need to, because looking at those words, it gives you anxiety. It makes you want to cry, but when you're not looking at them, you're only doing it to yourself. So stay away from the words. Do what you're doing. You're doing a great thing. Just continue that urgency life-saving every day.
Stay the course. Keep focused. I would definitely agree with those things.
What about you? What
are
you gonna say?
I don't say much. I agree with you.
We think the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
So let's talk about, you know, a special animal story. So are there any stories that you can share about adoptions that, you know, and it could be something that you just were super surprised, or
so
something
many.
You're just super happy about? Yeah, I'm sure.
So many.
But is there something that, you know, jumps out at you when I ask that question?
Yes.
All right.
I just want to say this one, because this one, I'm so happy. We have a lot going on. I'm sure we'll get to that in another podcast today, later. But we have a lot of negativity going around yet again for Palm Valley Animal Center. And within all of that, people don't care to see that there are great people working behind these doors to save lives.
Well, I think it's hard for them, though. You know, if, like you said, right, if they're focused on social media and on certain pages on social media, then they're only getting that story, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like this podcast and our blog and our website and our social media accounts are so important, because this is how we're getting our story out.
Yeah.
And this is not just happening to us. This is happening to shelters across the country, regardless
yeah.
of how many animals are saving. So I think it's super important that everybody hears these things from you guys. So tell me about the story.
So with all that negativity going around that I exclude, put to the side, because I don't got time for that, I had an adopter from South Florida was interested in one of our at-risk euthanasia, which was a pre-euthanasia of 24-hour deadline.
Okay.
It was a pit bull, terrier pit bull mix.
Yeah.
Had a deadline of 24 hours because of food aggression. Aggression couldn't be kenneled with other dogs.
Yeah.
We have under the animal's profile enough information that we have on that animal so that way we can be transparent with the adopter. So I let this guy know, hey, this is what's going on with the animal. I can't guarantee you how it's going to react later. You're going to be signing a behavior waiver. Anything after this point, you have to figure out means. We're not liable, anything like that. He's okay. I'm okay with that. Like,
wow.
I want to save this dog. She reminds me of my other dog that passed away. And the way he saw that dog was somebody who advocates for us as well through Twitter posted another dog, and then he went looking on our website and saw this dog that he liked. Then he saw another one. Her name was Brigade and Laura Craft. He liked her too and said, hey, can I adopt her? She was going to be at risk as well, pre-euthanasia for aggression. Two dogs that were aggressive, and I'm like, well, I can't tell you if they are for sure 100% or not how they're going
right.
to do together, but if you want to save their lives, I thank you for that, but you'll have to provide your own boarding because they're at risk of space here. Other animals are at risk of not having space in the kennel, so that's why they're going to be at risk of euthanasia. I'm fine with that. I'll do boarding. I already did the boarding in your area. I did the outcome adoption. He left this last Thursday. Last Thursday, he drove from Florida all the way down here. He
wow.
got to Edinburgh on Sunday. No complaints. He didn't let anything stop him. He didn't say, you guys are killing these animals. He didn't have anything to say, but I want to save them. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I'm driving my butt down there. And he almost got in an accident. His tire blew out,
oh,
too.
Oh, no.
So,
on the way.
Yeah, he was
wow.
in Kingsville, 2 hours out. And he still kept in contact with me. Good heart. One of the dogs was Laura Craft, so he was like, you know what? Everyone told me it was going to be an adventure. Laura Craft. These things keep happening. And he got here Sunday, and he actually just sent me an update photo today before I got in here. The two dogs are sleeping in the same bed together.
Wow.
We're going to do a post showing, you know, before and after.
Yeah, so keep an eye on our social media and look for that post.
It made me so happy. I wanted to cry because these dogs, you know.
What an amazing story. So I like this for so many reasons. One, you know, pit bulls were not something that we've always adopted here. So we could talk more about that. Mm-hmm. Two, that this guy, you know, Twitter is home of some of our biggest I guess we can call them haters, right?
Yeah.
So he found us through that, came, or he's in Florida. I mean, there's other, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of other pitbulls that look like that, but he drove here to save these dogs. I think that's so amazing, and none of that would have happened without transparency, right? If we didn't post these animals that were at risk, none of that would have happened, And I think it's important to note, too, because this is something that comes to us a lot, and I want to explain that, is food aggression and dog-to-dog aggression in kennels and how that's a source for euthanasia. Just to clear it, we 100% understand that if we take the stress out of these situations that these dogs are in, that most of those things will clear up in a home and will never be an issue. But here, when we get 100 animals a day, and we have very limited kennel space,
mm-hmm.
these dogs are forced to co-house. So if we have dogs that cannot share a kennel with other dogs, then they become at risk for euthanasia, not because it's something we want to do, but because that one dog is taking up a whole kennel that we could theoretically put 3 or 4 dogs in. So they it's super unfortunate. But right now, until we can get more animals out, that's just where we're at. Those dogs have to be placed on a youth list. But the good thing is, as soon as they're placed on a youth list, we let everybody know, public, staff, volunteers, the world, and sometimes somebody will drive all the way from Florida to come save not one, but two of these dogs. So I think that's an amazing story.
There's clarification for that. So when people don't understand why this animal's at risk because that food or other animals. Now, we understand that if it's taken out of that kennel and given time, it could work.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
But so, if you have questions and you wonder why, don't think we're not going to give you the answer.
We will.
Multiple people have a problem with that. I can tell you, that guy, I told him, not because we don't want to save this animal, but
yeah.
because it's risking more animals from getting adopted. So
that's it.
Questions, if you have questions, just ask us and we'll answer.
Just reach
call
out.
Us. Oh, well, come in person.
Yeah, come in person. Phone calls,
person,
social
yeah.
media, it just doesn't help. That doesn't help anybody. I mean, adoptions, it helps
adoptions,
but
yes.
questions and anger come walk through our front doors.
So let's talk about it, Yveli. What,
okay.
give me a good story.
I have a lot of good stories,
okay.
actually, since I've been in adoption for 2 years. There's one, because sometimes I can be a little judgmental, which I shouldn't be.
No.
We all can.
I want to talk about that, too. I'm glad
so,
you brought that up.
Yeah,
continue.
I had a lady who came in, and she wanted to adopt a cat. It's an older lady. I was like, oh, this cat is too hyper for her. I don't think it's going to work. And she goes, oh, she was super nice. The nicest lady ever. So I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and do your adoption.
Yeah.
So I did her adoption. And then she came back 2 days. And 2 days later. And I'm like, oh, she's going to return the cat. And then she's like, oh, she's doing great. She was showing me pictures. She goes, I'm here to take another cat. So I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm like, oh, who are you talking
yeah.
about?
And
yes.
then I'm like, okay, I'll help you out. Because, you know. So she took 2 cats, so she already has 3 cats at her home, but she took 2 of them. I'm like, oh my god, what a nice lady. I'm like, I feel so bad because I didn't want to do her adoption since
yeah.
she's an older lady. I'm like, oh, this cat is just too much for her. So a week went by and she came back and she took another cat. So she has 4 cats of us, and she sends me videos, pictures that cats are having like the best time in their life.
Oh my god.
And that's how I understand. I shouldn't be judging anybody.
Right.
Before I do any adoptions, just because that's a big issue that we have sometimes, that we rescue these guys and we're like, no, they have to have the perfect home.
Yeah.
So when you find somebody that wants to adopt them and they don't look like the way you think they should look like.
Yep.
But we should go ahead and stop that.
Well, it's super hard though.
We've grown from that
yeah,
since year one. We've definitely, all of us staff
mm-hmm.
has definitely changed in that.
Yeah, but it's important to know that you're always going to have that. You know
yeah.
what I mean? You guys are just better now at
yes.
shutting it up, calming it down in
yeah.
your head. But that's just normal human
yeah.
behavior, right? Our first reaction is to think, I don't know if this person
yes.
is right for this animal, you
yeah.
know? And I think that holds, that's a big barrier for a lot of shelters across the country, you know? I think even our adoption process
mm-hmm.
was kind
that,
of barrier
yeah,
filled. Yeah, and taking away those barriers over the past year, I mean, we've seen
yeah.
a huge increase in adoptions.
A lot.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, in the first 3 months that I was here, so I started in July, we saw a 62% increase in adoptions just in those first 3 months. And that was through conversations. I remember having conversations with staff. And, you know, a lot of people felt the same way. No, not our community. Our community is different. People here don't care about animals.
Yeah.
People here don't know how to treat animals. But then I would always ask the same thing. Where are you from?
Yeah.
You know, and you guys are all representatives of the community, right? And you guys are the most amazing people I've ever met. So how would we think that our community is any different? It's just you guys have the information. You know
yeah.
these things, but they didn't. You know, the
yeah.
public didn't. So that's where you guys shine as adoption specialists. You guys are the ones that are really talking to the community and educating them on how to take care of these animals. If we just had those barriers in place, like, you know, we need a home visit, we need to see your vet records, we had all these things,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe people are not as proud about their living arrangements,
yeah.
so people, maybe they don't want you to
yeah,
come
yeah,
look at their
sure.
house. So it doesn't mean they're bad pet owners, they just don't want that. So that would stop an adoption. Or if we wanted to look at vet records, we know that vets are super expensive
yeah.
around here, right? So not everybody has the luxury of getting their animals vaccinated and fixed. But we know when we adopt out an animal, it's going to be vaccinated, fixed, microchipped, and all those things. So if we did any of those things, that would be a barrier to people that are great people like this lady
yeah, she's awesome.
Adopting, right? Yeah,
she's
amazing.
She sent me videos of her singing to the cats.
It's so
eating.
Cute.
It's amazing.
My
gosh. You'd ask her, we could post it.
I know, I'm going to
yeah.
ask her. She's awesome.
That is so cool. And I'm so glad you brought that up because I think that is something that is a huge struggle for shelters. The more shelters that I talk to, the more adoption specialists I talk to, it's always the same thing, you know?
we want, in our minds, we're like, we want them to go to the best home. So in the beginning, it was kind of like, I see you, but I don't know if you're the best fit for them. It was not necessarily like a judgment, but kind of holding off because you wanted that animal to be in the perfect home.
It's
so,
all done with the best intentions.
Yeah, but not in the...
Right, and that's where I see, you know, it happens a lot with rescue organizations where if we think about rescues and local rescues as our pulse, right?
Mm-hmm.
The faster they get animals out, the more animals they can take from us, right? But if they have barriers to adoptions and they're not doing as many adoptions, that just means more animals are dying in the shelters that they pull from. So I think what you guys were talking about is super important, not only for animal shelters, but for rescues across the country. Barrier-free is going to save more animals, right? And our adoption process doesn't change. You know, we still talk to everybody. We give them as much information as we can. It's our job to educate them, to make them good pet owners. Because you guys know this, and this is another thing. When I first got here and I heard the things about our community and things like that, we're not the only show in town,
yeah,
you know? And there's literally, they can drive down the street and find a dog or a cat. They can go on Craigslist, they can go to flea markets, all sorts of things. So if we deny them without giving them any information on how to be a good pet owner, they're just going to get an animal. And then, if they don't have the knowledge that we could have given them on how to treat that animal, where's it going to end up?
Or get a spayed.
It's going to end up with us,
yeah,
you know? And then we're going to deny somebody else its adoption. So I'm so glad you brought that up. I mean, I think that's a huge part, and that's something that, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with,
mm-hmm,
along with transparency. So, all right. So what advice would you give somebody that, you know, may not know if animal welfare is the right career path for them? What advice would you give them about starting a job in animal welfare?
It might not seem like the right job at the beginning, but it's still worth it at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll get anxiety, but it's not worth it.
If you love animals,
yeah,
we do.
Mm-hmm.
You either have a thick skin or you build it. We had two people start with us that were very emotional.
Yeah.
They loved animals, but they couldn't understand like the process of, you know, animals being put to sleep.
Yeah.
So there was tears often.
A
and
two
and
people that started
with us.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't need to say names, but
no,
there's
definitely,
you know, that emotion, and they asked, like, how do you guys not cry?
Yeah.
Believe me,
we're
crying inside.
Oh, yeah,
we cry
definitely.
But for us, it's, you don't stop, you keep moving. Like, it's sad. But for them, it was still taking them quite some time to, you know, they would cry, this animal was being put to sleep, why? And we, Yoveli and myself, would definitely speak with these people and let them know, hey, like, you're doing a good thing. You just have to kind of come to an understanding and see it in a bigger picture.
Right.
It's not just one animal that's, you know, either being saved. Multiple are being saved. To kind of explain it, you'll build a thicker skin. You're not just gonna ignore animals being suffering.
Oh, no.
You're
right.
Gonna work harder, and you're gonna come to understanding, and you yourself will be able to educate people better. One of the girls that works with us here, you know, she's thanked us for working with us because we've kind of like given her the strength to move forward. She
That's
came
amazing.
Out of her shell from just being in the front talking to people to doing adoptions to doing what, like, profiles on social media, urgency. So she's come a long way from the beginning.
I've seen so many changes like that just in the year I've been here, so I can only imagine how many changes you guys have seen in the time you've been here. It's great, and I think the difference between, you know, or something that really helps out at our facility is the culture that we've brought and the team that we've created, right? So I mean, that person that you've just spoke about that wasn't sure about working here or was kind of, you know, keeping to his or herself, and if they didn't have a team and a family to really go back to and talk to about these things and to coach them through that like you guys have, they wouldn't be here, you know? So, and I'm sure now that person, if they see somebody like that, we'll do the same.
Exactly.
So it's super important when we're talking about animal welfare to, even in the words, animal welfare, right? But
this is a people business.
Yes.
You know,
it
if
is.
We don't just throw animals out for adoption. We build relationships
That's
and
it.
Educate. That's what people don't understand. There's people
We are giving people family members.
Yes.
How
they
important
are family.
It is. That's what I mean. It's like, there's no other thing like that. You know, like, we are building lifelong relationships. And that's... It's such a big thing, and I think that is such a... It was such a turning point in my career when I realized that, you know, my way to help the animals is not a direct path from me to the animals, right? I can't do it myself. It's with the people. It's with the team. So I think the team that we have here that we've created is amazing. And you guys are shining examples of that. And I'm so happy that you were willing. Actually, Yaveli wasn't as willing to talk about this, but
I don't like talking.
But you guys have done amazing. So let's talk about the future. So what are some things that get you excited about our shelter and the future?
To become a no-kill, but for that we need also. It's gonna happen. I'm just kidding.
This is how it's gonna happen.
So we need the community help, of course. Community needs to help us a lot, and I love the community, even though sometimes they don't really like us.
Yeah.
But I wanna just invite them to come in, ask questions. What can we do for them?
Yeah.
Anything questions, we will go ahead and answer it. Just because we're here to save animals.
Yeah.
We're not here to kill them. We don't come to work and we're like, oh, today
yeah.
is a good day to put so many dogs to leave. That's horrible.
Yes. Right,
so
no way.
We need the help, as much help as we need from the community. That'll be awesome. So if we want to reach no-kill community, they have to help us.
That's
we need
true.
Their help.
And so you talk about the community.
Mm-hmm.
You were just part of a really cool thing with Kenny Lombardi, the director of grassroots advocacy for Best Friends. Can you tell me about that experience yet?
Yes, it was awesome. So we actually went outside, talked to a bunch of the community. We found two awesome guys. One of them had like 11 cats in his backyard and he was feeding them. He goes, yeah, I love animals. And he had a bunch of cats. He was actually helping, taking care of them. And then we had another guy. He had an organization for cats. He loves cats.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was, yeah, we have a lot of cats at work. We give them a lot of food. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know, like, we have so many people that like cats down here.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that actually...
Hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hidden. That actually helping cats and dogs everywhere.
Well, the funny thing is, they're not so much hidden. It's that... Nobody's looking for
exactly.
them. Right?
Or they're afraid to say they're crazy cat ladies.
Yeah, or crazy cat guys.
Men,
yeah.
So we got their information, and we are really looking forward to working with them.
That's amazing. So you guys went out. You went out into the communities that we've targeted, right? The communities that we get the most dogs and cats from. Went out with some handouts and started building this group of advocates in the community. I think that's so, so cool. I'm so excited for more of this. Yeah, so I saw the videos. There's going to be more videos coming out, but it's, I think, you know, my first year at Palm Valley was all about, like, foundational, like, building the foundation of what Palm Valley is and what we stand on. But this next year is all about going out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the house built. Let's go see what our neighbors are like, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Figuring out the community, getting them involved, community clinics and things like that. That's, in my opinion, the way of the future. So I'm excited that you guys got to do that. So let's talk.
Hi.
What are you excited about for the future, Stephanie?
So, well, obviously, every single day we continue to get excited to reach our goal of being no-kill. And the same thing I always say, it's a community effort. We do as much as we can when animals come in, but if people aren't doing their part on the outside, we're not gonna get there faster.
Yeah.
Spaying and neutering is the biggest thing. People
yeah.
still want to have puppies from their litter, from their animal.
Definitely.
I'm excited for the future to just save more animals, but if we still have people who aren't participating with us,
yeah,
and they're against us,
and that's why we go out and talk to them.
Yeah,
we go, hey, let's be friends, come.
Yeah.
So
let's,
I just
want to
give an example. Like, when I was at PAWS, people would always come in. I love educating people,
mm-hmm.
even the most angry of them all. They come in, so they come in and they're like, oh wow, your facility is so great. We were just at Palm Valley and that place is no, and oh, I mean, I'm sorry you feel that way, but that's our intake facility. The animals that are here come from over there. So let me explain to you what actually happens. We're not killing them. They come in, like, I just educate people, and then they kind of are, some of them are a little taken back, like, okay, wow, I didn't have right information, or maybe nobody spoke to them.
Right.
So it's just educating the community so they can get a better understanding. There's still going to be people who don't like us, but if they can understand that they can be a part of the solution and not the problem,
Yeah.
And there's going to be more. There's going to be more room for growth every single day. There is.
Definitely.
There really is. The little small amount of people that are not willing to participate, there's a bigger group of people.
Yeah, I call them those people crickets, right? You only hear them at night when nobody else is making noise. If a car drives by or if a cricket's next to a busy highway, you'll
never
hear them.
All the time they have spending to, like, be negative, we're here working.
Yeah.
We're working.
But so as we get, you know, as we get louder and louder, you know, we won't hear them at all. And that's all where, you know, focus comes in. Just really focusing on our mission. You guys both mentioned no kill, and that is something that I'm super excited about as well. So for those of you that are listening, I just want to explain no kill. So no kill nationally is a 90% benchmark. 90% of the animals that come into your facility leave alive. So when I first started here in July, Palm Valley was saving 33% of the animals. Today, in August for this whole year of 2019, we're saving 69% of the animals. So insane increase. And as you can tell, if you listen to these podcasts, it's this team, right? So everything that we've wanted to change, and we've changed so many things in the past year, none of those things could happen without this team and their willingness to change and their willingness to accept things that they weren't really, you know, fans of, as you heard, myself included. So what I would urge for anybody listening is to really just take a step out, and I think Stephanie mentioned it, really think about the thousands. You know, it's in animal welfare, it's really easy to focus on the one.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, then that's completely fine once you grow in that save rate. But right now, especially where we're at, we have to focus on the thousands and how we can get the most animals out safely and as healthy as they can possibly be. So as we go forward, if there's things that our animal shelter or your local animal shelter, if there's things that you don't agree with, that's completely fine. But I think what I would urge you to do is get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Ask questions, become a foster, become an adopter, become a person that wants to donate. And you could donate anything. We would take anything. it all helps out. So I think that's... Do you guys have anything else that you want to add before we go?
Well...
Any parting words?
We love what we do. We work very hard at saving animals every single day. And any of the people out there who feel otherwise, step foot in our shoes. Come see what we do. I'm happy where I'm at. And I'm going to continue advocating, whether I continue to stay here for years to come or outside of the shelter. I'll still continue advocating.
Of course. I think it's like a lifelong thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, the same. I love what I do. I love my job. One thing
and
that
we're
I
a little family.
The only thing, this quote that I remember that you said, we have so much things against us, it's not going to stop.
Right, exactly. There's so many things that are against our facility, and we're never going to let that stop us, ever. So just so everybody knows, we have one of the lowest budgets out of any facility specifically of our size. We're so far away from any other shelters that can help us. We are 15 minutes from Mexico. I could take my lunch break there if I wanted to. That's how close we are. So the nearest shelters and rescues that can help us are far away. Some of our biggest rescue partners are actually in some of the most northern states like New York and New Jersey. So any help that we can get, we would love, but we'd also encourage you to just help out anybody that's local to you. If you can help out an animal, you have, you know.
I just want to say, if you start seeing, you know, negative social media rumors, before you follow foot with other people's words, contact us. Let us tell our story. Don't let other people tell our story.
That's it.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening. If you want to help out.
Thank you for joining us for episode 4 of the Underdogs of Animal Welfare. Again, my name is Michael Bricker. And if you really like these episodes, if you want to hear us record more of these episodes, please like and subscribe. Follow us on your favorite podcasting app. We're on Spotify, Anchor, and Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.